Welcome to another episode of my podcast, The Lisa Ann Experience. Thank you so much for spending time with me. And don't forget, if you're enjoying the podcast, to subscribe, rate, and review. Those reviews really put a smile on my face, Chris. I mean, I get a good review.
Oh, yeah, every single time.
What's weird, though, is when you get a bad review, it really scars you. So it's scary reading reviews in general.
Scary. Well, there shouldn't be any negative reviews anyway. What's there to be negative about?
I realize that the negative review that I read was from a couple of years ago, but it was still just somebody saying that I'm kind of like too into myself and all of these other things. And I thought, well, you kind of got to be to talk about yourself on a podcast, right?
Exactly.
If you missed last week, you need to go back and listen. We were joined by Jeremy Piven. It was an incredible interview talking all about his new movie, My Dad's Christmas Date, that came out last Friday. So I advise you search and find how you can view the movie. Take some time, kick back, relax. Chris and I just loved it. Right, Chris? It was a sweet, beautiful movie.
Perfect Christmas movie. Just puts you into the mood of Christmas. It's been a tough year for most people, and this kind of brought you back to the times before Corona, being able to look at you know, Christmas from the lens of a non-COVID world was kind of nice.
Yeah, I almost tipped a guy that was up in a tree hanging Christmas lights by Rock Center the other night. Day I was walking by, he was putting up Christmas lights. I'm like, well, you're putting up Christmas lights. This is so exciting. And the food truck guy that was next to us was like, hey, this chick wants you. I'm like, no, dude. I'm just excited for the Christmas lights. Like, if I had cash, I'd tip them right now. But it was that moment. A little bit of time catching up today before we get to a friend of mine, a true inspiration as our guest today that I know you're really going to enjoy, another author, another mentor, and you can learn a lot about him. So this is going to be a great interview. And today, we really, you know, the Ask Lisa Ann, the mailbag is just something everyone lives for. I decided to go in big this week. You know, they say that the cream rises to the top. Chris, do you think that's why some of these guys write their whole question in the subject matter? Because they think that the cream is rising to the top and like their emails should only go in the subject matter? Because I pulled quite a few of those today.
I'm not even going to try to figure out why these people do what they do. I can't really relate to them on any level. So sure, why not?
Obviously, they don't know how to use email. Not a tricky situation. I'm sure there's a YouTube video that teaches you what subject means and what the body means.
If they don't know how to write an email, they don't know how to use YouTube. They don't know how to search things on YouTube.
And I fear that they also may not be listening to my podcast. They are just,
you can almost guarantee
they're
it.
They're just throwing things at the wall to see what sticks. And that's how the emails come in. But big surprise, everybody. Plot twist. Last week, you know, my people, Jeff, who sent an email in last week, my friend Toddy, Ari, all my friends that I talk to a lot on social media, they realize when I'm quiet, I'm up to something. So they know if I had to reschedule my Facebook Live from Thursday to Friday, that I'm up to big things. Well, the big thing was a move. Yes, I did it. I moved. I packed up all of my belongings again. I had the move last Thursday, and I have to tell you, the key ingredient in the move when I woke up Thursday morning was knowing that it was Thursday night football, and my biggest fear was a mover touching a remote control. So I immediately got the remote controls to my TVs, and I put them in my backpack because I knew my backpack was going to stay with me like Dora the Explorer. No one touches my magical backpack. And Thursday night, there I was, completely set up in my living space, totally exhausted. I could not believe that I thought I was in shape until I moved boxes around because I was so sore. I could barely move for 2 days. But I was kicking back watching the Thursday night game. So it was a success. The move was just, it went off without a hitch. I was pretty excited. The night before, I heard some cops outside dragging around some of the barricades. I guess they were going to try to shut down the area in case anything went down with the election. So I sneakily went out there and grabbed some of the barricades, and I put them in the front row spot at my building, like right in front of where the city bikes are. There's a couple parking spots. So when my movers got there in the morning, they had front row parking, which made their move so much easier. Super proud. That was a 1 a.m. in the morning move. I heard the noise outside, and I was like, yo, this is my opportunity. I'm taking it. So I went out there, you know, out there in my pajamas, of course, with a big coat on, looking like a homeless person, thinking that I'm stealing barricades, but it worked. And you know what? When you do little things for movers, you have a better move. I also realized through a friend of mine, used to be a mover, You need to tell them when they arrive that you will be buying them lunch. You don't want anyone to have any food insecurity. You want them to know, and you're going to let them know that they can have whatever lunch they want. So they wanted deli sandwiches. There's a great deli by my old apartment. So I took the orders on Post-its. Everybody had, you know, everything they wanted so that they knew. And then we all separated in the apartment, sat on the floor, sat down, had our lunch. I think it's very important. Movers like it when you buy them lunch. And, you know, it helps the second half of the move because you got everything out of the first place. You break for lunch. Then you go over the other side. They're kind of loving you. Make sure you have cash. Always tip your movers. Do the right thing. It's just, it's all your stuff. Like, you don't want it broken. There was not one item broken.
Good. I'm still trying to figure out the whole mover etiquette because the last two times I've moved, I've attempted to do it myself. It's hell.
It's hell.
The last time I tried to get a what are the vans called?
Oh, a U-Haul.
U-Hauls, right? We use we got a U-Haul, but we booked it for the morning that we were moving because we could only really afford it for 4 hours because by that time we were broke as anything, right? So I'm like, I'll go in the morning. I've packed most of the boxes and then I'll just load it all myself. It took me an extra half an hour to actually get to the U-Haul spot. Then once I got there, I think I was waiting for 45 or 50 minutes before they even took me because there was a big line.
Oh, no.
And then I drove back. There was traffic. And then I had like an hour to actually get everything out of the apartment before they took our keys from us. So I was hauling ass back and forth from our apartment to the U-Haul. I think I must have lost like 15 pounds just on that day because of the amount of physical activity that I did. It was
stressful.
Insane.
It makes
I
it a lot more stressful.
I was stressed the whole time.
Yeah, for myself,
my
you
goodness.
Know, there's only so much I can do. But it was a weekend of firsts in my new apartment. Seeing the sunset, just seeing the lights in the city.
We got a great view.
I got a great
my goodness.
View. I have outdoor space now, so I'm able to go out and stretch, do a little yoga in the morning. Like, it's just been heavy. I was even excited to do my first load of laundry. But let's talk about Saturday. I decided, all right, I wanted to have a mobile TV stand. So I wanted to put my 65-inch TV on a stand with wheels that I had already ordered on Amazon that was already here, and I was staring at the box. I went on, I read the reviews. They said it's a two-person job and it should take an hour. So I texted my best friend in California. I'm like, all right, I'm starting this project. Let's time me. I'm going to do it on my own. Let's see how it goes. Took me an hour and a half, but halfway through, I realized, oh, shit, I got to try and lift this 65-inch TV to put it up on the brackets. Like, here's the challenge. And, you know, my mind, the way my mind works is if I start something, I have to finish it. I'm like obsessed. Yep. So believe it or not, I managed to just very carefully and very patiently lift the TV, get it up on the clips, lock it in, tighten it up. And I was ecstatic. Like, it just felt like I had climbed like Mount Everest. Like, I just did something big. And, you know, the moments that I have when I'm doing something like that, something handy, building something, fixing something, I always look back to my grandfather. My grandfather taught me everything I need to know about a toolbox, about how to fix plumbing, about how to, he never wanted me to feel that I was weaker because I was a girl. And whenever I'm awesome. Building or fixing something, I truly feel his presence with me and I like talk to him. And one of the things he would scold me for was if I opened a box with a box cutter and I didn't do it away from my body. Because, you know, if you do it towards your body, you can cut yourself, right?
Yep.
And he was very diligent about making sure every time I did something, I had safety precautions in mind. And there were a couple times where the angle was weird and I like had to cheat it and open it kind of towards me. And I would look up and tell him, like, I know that that's not the right way to do it. I know I'm risking cutting myself. But I am so thankful that I had him in my life. And, you know, it's Veterans Day. And my grandfather was a photographer in World War II. And before he passed away, when he was at a home, one of the things I learned about my studies with dementia, Alzheimer's, the memory is really solid from many years past, but not solid in the moment. If I asked my grandfather what he had for lunch, it would be very difficult. But if I brought in photos, which he had boxes and boxes of photos from the war, he could tell me who his friends were that he was with, what he was shooting photos of. And he gave me a lot of those photos. I have photos of someone taking photos of my grandfather shooting dead bodies. I have photos of my grandfather carrying a camera, going up into a plane to go and shoot something over top. Like, we didn't have drones back then. And the history and all of it is so special. And he would set up his camera and he would take selfies, which, like, think about portraits, you know, years ago, and someone setting up a camera with a timer. He would take photos of himself opening all the mail my grandmother wrote to him. And she wrote to him every day for a little over 4 years that war lasted. Wow. And when he would get his mail, he would sit there with the pile, because he would get his mail maybe once a week or once every other week. And he would have 10 to 15 letters from my grandmother. And he would shoot selfies of him opening the letters. And then he would develop the photos and write my grandmother a love letter on the back of the photos.
Wow, that's beautiful.
And I have those photos.
Wow.
They're my most cherished possessions. They did not get to move with the movers. They stayed in my possession because it's something that I want to touch, right? I want to be sure that this box goes into a safe place. So very thankful that because of my grandfather, I am not afraid when something says it is a two-person job. And I am a one-person success story. And I got it done. And the TV moves around. So this weekend, I can watch the Masters and NFL at the same time, which is really perfect. Exciting. So things went well. The move was a success, though very exhausting. I can only imagine for you guys loading everything up. For me, packing and unpacking is just a disaster. It's just exhausting, right? But so worth it. At the end of the day, I'm in new space, new energy, bright light, just everything about it I totally love. So that's why I was quiet last week on social media, people. You'll be seeing and hearing more from the new space. But for now, I just want to let you all know that is where I was. It is time for us to talk to my guest. You can learn more about him at DominicQ.com, and he spells it DominicQ.com. That is also his social media. He's traveled the world. He's written incredible books. And somehow I get to sit here and introduce you as my friend because you, my friend, have made me a better person. Our friendship was ignited by one of my best friends in the entire world, which accelerated you instantly into my circle of trust. But this is my friend, Dominic Quartuccio.
So well done. Like I said, when you do it with the Italian hands, it just becomes like 15% easier.
It really does. It just flows. Dominic, how are you today?
I'm fantastic, Lisa. And you know, it's an honor to be in your circle of trust because that is a tight circle. There's some hurdles to overcome to get there, but once you're in, you are in. And I appreciate it.
It's a very hand-select group, and you know, my best friend that we share a mutual relationship and love for. She's an amazing person. She doesn't introduce me to many people. She knows how selective I am. So it automatically got you as one of my favorite people. And, you know, this is an interesting conversation, interesting time, because you're currently in a very fluid situation in your life. There's been a transition. That transition was triggered by a word that surrounds me like a bubble. That word is porn. And the word that would have surrounded you like a bubble would be corporate. So how do these things come together? And where does this ignite transition?
Oh, yeah. Porn and corporate come together like lamb and tuna fish. It's not always the best pairing. So I spent 15 years in financial services, as you know. And during that time, unbeknownst to anyone in the corporate world, I ended up entering Sex Addicts Anonymous for a period of 4 years. On the surface, I was a leader. I was one of the youngest people doing what I was doing in financial services. I was entrusted with lots of responsibility, and I had integrity in most areas of my life. But the one area of my life where I kind of held everything together, navigated all my stress, anytime I was like pressured, I would turn to sex. And I grew up Catholic in a really religious upbringing, lots of shame around my sexuality. It just from a very early age, it went into darkness. But that was the way I, and like a lot of other men, navigated my emotions and eventually came crashing down on me, entered Sex Addicts Anonymous in this really private, secretive, shameful world. And when I started to pick myself back up again, I built myself into a much different man, like one that I was proud of being, which led me to wanting to leave the corporate world to help coach other men and women around some of these areas of their lives that are secret, private, but primarily just to live your fullest potential.
Right.
And this fluid thing that you're talking about, Lisa, is for the past 4 or 5 years as an entrepreneur, I've been able to keep these two worlds of me speaking to corporate audiences about beating burnout and living productive life. And this other world, like the podcast that I run for men called The Great Man Within, where we talk about sex and sexuality, pornography, things that most guys don't talk about. Well, an email that I had gotten ready to send out to my men's groups, which was titled 4 Feel-Good Porn Alternatives for You to Watch. And actually, some of those alternatives came from you, Lisa. That ended up going out to 300 of my corporate clients through some like email glitch in our system, including the largest women's only group in the financial services industry that I do my business with. As you might imagine, you know, when someone's going about their business and their work email gets penetrated with an email about porn, it set off a firestorm. Overnight, I got fired from about 70% of my like business revenue clients. And it really caused a moment of reflection to say, you know, like, why had I built my entire business around something like so temperamental? And that is the period that I'm in right now, where I've now recently removed myself from all corporate work to focus 100% on helping men live their fullest potential and to destigmatize these conversations around sex and sexuality.
And when you say you got fired in a sense of, we're going to bring that word right back, which is shame. You got fired in the sense of shame because the word porn triggers people in a negative way, which is their choice. How you take a word and process it into your brain. And by the way, had anyone gone through and read the body of that email, you were supporting sites that a large majority of the population doesn't know are available and could be very healthy to them, whether they're single, whether they're couples. These are all sites. We had talked about these sites. These are usually porn made by women, for women. You know, there's a lot of lines that are not crossed. It is a healthier version of what is out there and readily available. So the choice was, and when you and I discussed this the first time, I said, you know, anybody had the choice to just delete the email. Like, get over yourself. Just fucking delete the email. But instead, the trigger was, let's fire this person. And now that wasn't under anything you had done wrong, under the consistency of the relationships you had and the talks that you and I have had since then. One of the things I thought about after one of our talks is these same people that were so angry and responsive immediately, just triggered, are the same people that, if you ask me, are not communicating with their own children about sex. They are continuing the raising your family in a world of shame. So they go out and hide these things. And when you hide things, it can get very dark because you're burying it. So what you experienced was kind of like an incredible ray of light of saying like, oh my gosh, I just don't fit in with this mindset. Though you'd love to take the time to help people adapt their mindset to seeing these things in a healthier way, how much did it hurt you as a human to know that people would turn their back over a fucking email?
You know what was so like liberating about that, Lisa, is that it actually didn't hurt that people would turn their back. Like, that was actually one of the biggest gifts, was like, I read some of these emails. And there were people who called me a fraud, you know, presenting myself as a leadership coach who's talking about porn, like, you're not a real, you know, you're disgusting, those kinds of things. None of that really hit me and moved me in any which way, because it just kind of showed me their own wounds around something like this. What hurt was, you know, the business going away, the revenue, figuring out like, okay, what am I going to do with it? Like, and that's something I'm still sorting through, and that's going to be fine. But you're right, like, this word porn is so triggering. There was one woman on my list who had listened to a 15-episode podcast series that I'd done exclusively for women, where I had shined a light on 15 women in the male-dominated financial services spaces to highlight like how challenging their lives could be, and, you know, in the male-dominated world, and to shine a light on their gifts. She listened to all those episodes and could hear my heart, my intentions. But as soon as she gets that one email about porn, all of that is thrown out. And she was the one who basically said, I want this man fired. If this company hires you ever again, I'm going to disassociate my entire firm. And so it just really caused me to see like how triggering the word porn can be. And I also did a little bit of reflection, Lisa. I started to try and relate. Like I tried to figure out how could she feel that way?
Right.
And when I wanted to, like, and having to own up to my own biases, there was a period of time where a similar word caused me that kind of triggering. And it was the word religion, right? Because I think about like when I grew up Catholic, right? And I blamed a lot of my sexual addiction and these private and secret issues because of religion taught
right.
me that. It made me feel wrong.
We were supposed to feel totally wrong if we weren't married and producing babies. That was really the only purpose for having sex. What are you talking about? And I can remember being a young girl and watching my 18-year-old cousins getting married before they were even old enough to drink because they just wanted to have sex legitimately.
Right.
Like they were already doing it behind their parents' back. And when there was the occasional teen pregnancy and they would talk to me about it, well, I said, well, why weren't you on the pill? And they would say, well, the pill is against our religion.
Right.
And I'm like, yeah, but so is fucking premarital sex. Like, yeah. I don't understand. Why'd you make that choice? Like, okay, but because of so much shame that they could not go and ask for birth control and face someone that they were having sex.
Right.
That's what it really was. It was their own shame of not being able to get themselves in the door to see a doctor.
That's right. And so listen, I mean, so many people have had that experience of religion either oppressing or telling you're wrong. And not everyone's experience is like that about it. I know plenty of religious people who are very well adapted, but like for 15 to 20 years, I thought religion was the bane of my existence. And I looked at people who were religious as there must have been some screw loose. Like there could be a person who I was friends with for a long time. And then as soon as they said something about praising Jesus Christ, I'd be like, that person screwed up. Yeah, but that person's got a screw loose.
So how
and
did
I would
you work
them
through
too.
That? Because you working through that is probably a nice kind of way for you to figure out how you could help others work through
yep.
their trigger word of porn. How did you work through your view on others in religion?
Great question. There was a time like over this last decade, I've really done a lot of inner work, like determining the kind of man that I want to be. And as I started to do that inner work and became more confident in myself, all areas of my life seemed to upgrade and I started to be really compassionate to all people, even if they were dicks, you know? I could see why that like that behavior was possible, like was just resulted in their life. But the one area of my life I still harbored resentment towards was religion. And anytime it came up, I got this dark feeling inside of me and I just like, I don't want that feeling anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't want to carry around that anger anymore. I don't want to be triggered like that. I don't want to be like the woman who sent that porn email to me. So I actually started to seek out people who were deeply religious that I could have conversations with. And one man I met who is a Christian minister, who I called him up and I said, listen, I want to have a conversation with you every Friday afternoon. I don't want to be converted, but I just want to understand your perspective and you're a man that I trust. And we did that for about 6 months or so.
Wow. He gave you that much time. Like, you
yeah.
know, what's the most valuable resource we all have? Time.
Yeah.
The fact that he gave you that much time, that was you doing the work. But he also allowed you to do the work because he opened his time for you. How
100%.
Incredible.
I mean, it was mutually beneficial. Like I coached him on some inner work stuff. He opened me about that. So it was mutually beneficial. And then what just naturally started to happen, Lisa, was without even trying, more and more men and women came into my life who were deep religious, who were very accepting, who know all about my sexual addiction, who know all about how much I talk about porn and love me just the same.
Yeah, because you now see with clearer eyes and the judgment is erased. Also, your judgment came from the resentment you had for the path that religion put you on.
Yep.
So there was a cause and an effect. This was not just out of left field. And it's ironic that we had already had this podcast scheduled when we now find out that Jeffrey Toobin, okay, me Toobin,
yep.
decides to masturbate during a Zoom meeting thinking that his camera is off. And I'm going to tell you, I printed out an article that I read last night because I've been following this very closely. And here's what surprises me about what you just went through with an email in the past month as compared to what his colleagues are saying about him. Here's the thing. I don't care if Jeffrey Toobin has demons. I don't care if he's a weirdo or a pervert. I don't care if he fondles himself 20 times a day while wearing his sun hat listening to Mozart. What I care about is his brain and his analytic skills. He made an embarrassing, stupid mistake. Let's leave it there. and get on with saving America. Here's another comment. We Americans love to talk and talk and talk about sex, but there's no one topic that remains so taboo. And Tubin is paying the price for it. According to a 2016 survey, 95% of men and 81% of women in America have masturbated. Yet in the same poll, over half of respondents said they felt uncomfortable talking about it.
Yep.
One more. Newsflash, Tubin masturbates, but I'm guessing you all do the same, dear reader. Maybe you should stop feeling weird and guilty about that, and we can all stop making fun of him. Now, it's funny to me how in the corporate world, if you don't pose a threat of being a little bit different than everybody else, they don't have your back. Your email, which could have been easily deleted, triggered something, a change in your life, you have to pivot. You are now looking at the pivot, which you're thrilled about, because in the big picture, this was all meant to happen.
Sure.
But what surprises me is how his peers are deeming this somewhat acceptable. My questions are, will this situation now force employees to add masturbation in workspaces, whether they're shared or virtual, off the table? Because if you tell me all of these bigwigs are going to write these little quotes and stand up for this guy, then as an employer, I now have to think, oh, how do we not let this happen? And I'm sorry, I am not judging him for masturbating. I am judging him for doing two things at one time. He was in a group setting, okay? You don't go sit down at In-N-Out and masturbate. It's no fucking different, okay? You are in a group setting. So how are people defending this man and the fact that he has not been fired? He has a chance to get his job back.
Right.
With no shame, because he's a lawyer and he's brilliant. But these same people would shame me the second I walked by them. I'd like to add in my personal take, Tubin is the type of guy that I saw walking into strip clubs where specific dancers would come up to me with like, okay, I'm going to be in the back for a while because this guy wants me to pee on him, or this guy wants me to stomp on his balls, or this guy wants me to do crazy shit. He's also the type of guy, in my opinion, who would get prostitutes, but then would be the first one to want to jail sex workers. So we have such a line in the sand here, and now we have somebody on mainstream television. You know, I'm not shaming him again for masturbating, but there's a time and a place for everything. And I'll tell you right now, I know that my office space, my work area, when I'm doing a Zoom meeting, that is the workplace, whether it's remote or in the office, it's the same. Whether he does that in his office, we don't know. But didn't we just pretty much criminalize all the men that have over the past 3 years that lost their jobs in broadcast because they were doing these types of things in their office?
Right. Right. Well, I think you brought up so many great points here, Lisa. And I think what's different about this one, obviously this one's at home, right? And the second thing was, he wasn't perpetrating on anyone else. He was just jerking off for himself, and it ended up getting caught on Zoom, right? Which is like,
Step away from your desk, go in the shower,
trust me,
go in the bathroom.
I get it.
I would never, and especially because there were still people talking in this meeting, by the way.
This is where having some experience as a sex, like going through sex addiction, being compulsively controlled by my behaviors and being around hundreds of men who are in recovery for years, I have a chance to kind of see Jeffrey Tubin and his behavior in a different way. And based on some other stuff that you just shared about seeing him walk into a strip club and some of the things that he's requested.
He hasn't. I'm saying, in my opinion, he's the type of guy that would have. Like, I've seen his guy.
Got it.
Any clubs that were by like courthouses or municipal buildings, these reporters, they would all come in and ask for weird shit. And I'm like, yep, these are the most judgmental people in the world, but they want the weirdest shit. And they're paying this girl for her secrecy. So they have a specific girl they go to.
It's the secrecy thing. When we're talking about secrecy, secrecy is born from shame, right? Like, I mean, we talk about this in my men's groups all the time. You have a public life, you have a private life, and you have a secret life. The public life is the persona that you carefully construct and put out in the world that's either going to be welcome in the business place or, you know, in home or your community. The private life is where you become discerning around, hey, there's some things that only certain people get to see, right? I'm in your circle of trust, Lisa.
Yep.
Like, I'm part of your private life.
Yep.
And that's around like honoring those boundaries. The secret life is really where shame goes, right? Like the parts of you that you don't think will be acceptable in the workplace or in your home. Like a lot of men carry around sexual fantasies that they have either been rejected by from partners in the past or judged by. So then it's like, you know what? I can't share that there. I'm going to go to porn to get that, or I'm going to cheat with another woman to get that.
Sure.
And where I see like Jeffrey Toobin's behavior of jerking off in the middle of a conference call, I see this because oftentimes men who are really high profile, who are very busy, who have a lot of stress in their lives, who also carry shame in their sexuality, will do really weird shit at really awful times of day. Like they can't create the space to do it outside of work because it's just like the thing they need, almost like a smoke break, okay. You know, a cigarette break.
Okay.
Because we haven't learned how to deal with our emotions more appropriately. So it becomes this catch-all stress release valve. And that's why I would suspect he did that in the middle of the day, because I used to do that shit in the middle of the day.
But it was a different time then. You weren't, you know, right on a Zoom meeting. You weren't thinking that your camera was off and it wasn't off. And you weren't, you know, think about the other people in that meeting. Like it's kind of, I would be creeped out if I knew somebody in my meeting while we were discussing stuff, turned off his camera to masturbate real quick and came back on, because that just seems a little bit inappropriate. Is that wrong of me?
No, it's not wrong of you. But I mean, if we think about what happened at the beginning of quarantine when everything started moving to Zoom calls, I remember explicitly there was like one woman on a Zoom call who took her phone to the bathroom and started peeing while everyone was watching her pull down her pants, sit on the toilet. And then all of a sudden she recognized that she was peeing and then like turned the Zoom off. Now it was embarrassing. It went viral.
Okay.
But there wasn't the shaming that went along with it because it wasn't sexual, right? It was like, oh, you know, everyone pees. Well,
everyone masturbates.
So what makes this so much different? Well, because it's in the category of sexuality and it was inadvertent, just like this woman peeing, but it's much more inflaming, obviously, because it's someone high profile, but also
and it's in the workplace. It's in the workplace. You could have
seen. Was he in an office or was he at home?
No, he was at home, but he was on a Zoom conference call. Listen, our homes are our office right now. So you have to have your space where, you know, there's no camera on this space, or go into another room. But I am just shocked because you just had, within the past month, this entire change of life over a fucking email that gave some really great porn tips on sites that many people who are that uptight would probably really enjoy, because it's really well made. We're not talking about anything aggressive or abusive towards women. We're talking about some good content, which is, you know, really nice. And then we get this, and I'm watching this. The reason I'm reading every single article, I must have read easily 100 articles on this already. Easily. Because I'm fascinated to hear men and women speak about it, who has a different tone, how we will move forward from this, and will this now need to be in HR? Will HR need to get involved and say, no masturbation during Zoom conference calls, whether your camera is on or not? It is considered your workspace, because they can't really say no masturbation between work hours. Because I've read surveys. Cosmo did a survey a couple years ago, how many people masturbate at work. Yeah. And it was pretty awesome. There was a good deal of people that halfway through the day are like, I'm going to go masturbate, but in the bathroom, just because they're stressed and they know how to like relax them. So they do it. But I was kind of surprised, because if you think about washing your hands in the bathroom and all the germs everywhere, you now have to think about different germs in the workplace.
Oh, well, I'll tell you what, like 5 years ago when I was leaving corporate, they were instituting meditation rooms. They had nursing rooms, right, for mothers. Who's going to be the brave first company that sets aside dedicated masturbation rooms with like Germex and other sanitizing stations?
Yeah, it would have to be sponsored by like definitely a lube company. It'd be sponsored by a lube. I could just see it now.
What do you think about Barstool Sports?
Really good, like a Durex campaign. Yeah. Maybe a little Pornhub over here. You'd short the female or the male based room where there's softer content coming through for you. But when you did decide to leave the corporate world before you started doing speaking, you can see I've loved all of your TED Talks. I watch all of your engagements. You can get every link you need to everything about Dom at DominicQ.com. You took a gap time in life and you actually went on a free travel trip where you did no work. You just free of work and you traveled the world. Do you remember the order of all the spots you were? Because I was following it through your blog.
Of course. Oh, man. I mean, that's an unforgettable experience. I called it my 90-day radical sabbatical. And it was my palate cleanser between 15 years of corporate and, you know, before starting this new job, this new career as, you know, coach and speaker. And, you know, when you work for 15 consecutive years without much time off, you don't realize like what that does to your nervous system. You don't realize like what it's like to just wake up on a given day and like to just say, what do I want to do today? And the luxury of wasting time. So I got some really good guidance from people who had done sabbaticals before. They said, buy a one-way ticket to your first destination and plan nothing else.
Okay.
And, you know, like Lisa, for someone as, you know, as structured and get it done as you,
that's
and you know,
tough
like,
for me.
It's like, oh my
but
God.
But I did that. So, you know, in 2018, I did that after you. When I went to Italy, I flew in one place and out the other and had some stops planned in between, but not everything. And I just week by week moved to new spots and loved it.
Right. I mean, it's a whole other way of living life versus like project planning everything. And instead, like, what is it that I want to do? So my first one-way trip was to Kauai in Hawaii, which is now one of my favorite places in the world. I actually stopped there first because a friend of mine passed away in Hawaii. She fell into one of the oceans and swept her out to sea. So I went to go see the place where that happened as kind of like a starting point. And I spent a month there. I did a 10-day silent meditation spontaneously while
By
I was
yourself.
There. Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Where so silent meditation, you don't talk, you don't read, write, no exercise, you don't look anyone in the eyes for 10 consecutive days.
No texting, no emailing.
You lock your phone away for 10 days.
Wow.
And that's all to go in. I'll tell you what, Lisa, the first 2 days of that were two of the most painful days of my life because if you think about just sitting, you know, with yourself and then you get the urge to scratch an itch or the urge to jerk off or the urge to go eat something or to talk to somebody, when all of those urges are stripped away from you, all of those comforts, what's left is like really who you are, those emotions. And it took me like 2 days to break through that. On the third morning, I woke up in so much pain, physical, emotional, mental, and I broke through that. And there was like this, my body just started shaking. Tears came out. There was like this release. And for the next 7 or 8 days, I was able to actually kind of break new ground, like new thoughts I'd never had before, ideas for my future, people who I wanted to spend time with, designing my life. And a deeper sense of peace and calm. Because I like anxiety and anxiousness and stress has always been a huge part of my life, which is
sure, your first career, addiction. Of course, and sex addiction, of course.
A lot of that dissolved from that. So anyway, there was that for, you know, the 10 days. And then I went to Bali, Thailand, New Zealand, and Australia for those 90 days and literally had memories that I will be recalling on my deathbed before I take my last breath here on earth.
And during that 90 days, you didn't email any work stuff. You didn't handle any work stuff. Your only real communications were maybe your blog and also checking out where you were going to go next, right? Mm-hmm. But it was really just you knew what day, when you were going to probably fly back. I mean, that had to be a really pivotal moment, like really life-changing experience when you knew you wanted to make a move. You had a direction, but you wanted to be settled before you had that direction going.
Yeah, you know what's interesting, Lisa, is like when we're kids, most of us, if you followed a somewhat traditional path of going to school in some regard, you have these like built-in transition points in your life where like one part of you, it's like it's over and then like another part of you begins, right? Like you go from, let's just say like junior high school to high school. That's a very different experience. And if you finish high school and then you go on to either work or to college, that's a very significant transition where one part ends and one thing begins. But then when you go into the working world, like your life can then become just one never-ending continuous stream of just kind of like, I don't know, like an amorphous blob.
Of course, because you're constantly thinking about what you have to do next. And you're constantly trying to finish something and jump to the next thing and hoping that maybe you would have all day Saturday to what? Do your laundry and get your personal items handled because you're going to try to get ahead on Sunday for the week and you're going to go back to doing more stuff and setting up more things and making sure that you get all your busy work out of the way. So Monday you'll be fully communicating with everybody and you'll be in the moment. And it is something that like, if you think, you know, most people take what, 2 weeks off a year? In other countries, they take months off a year. I mean, months, okay? They yeah. do not work like we work. They do not live to work. They work to live. It's that simple. And we very much live to work here.
What you're talking about hit me so dead on when I was on my sabbatical. You know, first of all, taking those 90 days, I thought was an eternity until I started traveling. I meet people from Germany or from Mexico or wherever else. And they're like, 90 days? Like, what are you gonna get done in 90 days? Like, it should be at least 12 months. And I'm like, oh. But, and after my second week of vacation or on the sabbatical, Lisa, I felt like I had been on sabbatical forever, because 2 weeks is an eternity. Like yeah. most people don't take 2 weeks vacation.
Not and at the same time. Not that not long at the same of a time. Block together.
But to even like the concept of having 11 more weeks still ahead of me, it was mind blowing. And a lot of people who have gone through the experience of, say, like a retirement transition
yeah.
will tell you this. Like, they'll say, it took me 6 months to calm down from my 40 years of working, because it's like so deeply ingrained in our systems. And I never knew I was wound so tight. But a few of the people I ended up on this like trip with, they were like, dude, you need to calm the fuck down. But I'm like, I am calm. I meditate. And they're like, no, trust me, you're wound really tight. And it took me like 11 weeks to really drop into that new way of being. And I see that with a lot of people who have been working for 10, 15, 20 years of their career, for sure.
And then for you, you know, you're coaching individuals and running groups. I know our mutual friend was a part of your women's group here in New York City, which she absolutely loved, and made some great connections and people that are just doing work together and really growing. You know, what you've probably seen from people is not only that work level continues and becomes this like perpetual just cycle, then you add in other things. You add in pets, you add in children. You add in family members that are aging. You add in more life events that just start laying on top, and everyone just seems to accept everything and not stop and think about themselves and their health and how slowing down and stopping and maybe finding a way to share some of these responsibilities, or do I need to work this much? Do I need all of these things? In one of your speaking engagements for TED Talks that I watched, you talk about the fact that people are always searching, you know, for joy. I don't feel joy. Well, you can't feel joy when you don't stop for a moment and just look around, but you're going, going, going. How do you suggest and how do you coach people through breaking that cycle?
Yeah. So what you're describing, Lisa, is the phenomenon that I call drift. And drift is a term that I learned from the immortal Napoleon Hill, who, if you don't know, has written the book Think and Grow Rich, which is by far and away the number one most sold book on personal development ever. Actually, it was the very first book that broke open the personal development category. Napoleon Hill lived during the Great Depression. He interviewed 500 of the world's most successful people, like the Henry Fords, the Roosevelts, the Rockefellers, mined their secrets about how to become rich and abundant, wrote that book, Think and Grow Rich. But where he coined the term drift was when he went out over a 25-year period of time and interviewed 25,000 people.
Wow.
Think about this, 25,000 people at the end of their lives.
Wow.
Who felt like they had lived a life of regret, like they didn't find their purpose or life of meaning, they left chips on the table. And he mined their secrets, because that's much more indicative of, I would say, the human population than the 500, you know, than these people who have been extremely successful. And he ended up writing a book called Outwitting the Devil. And he has this conversation with the devil, which is basically kind of a conglomeration of those 25,000 conversations. And the devil says, I enter the minds of people through habit. And when I can get into their habits, I establish the state of drifting. And when a person begins to drift, I can lead him straight towards the gates of hell. And what the devil is saying there is that this thing of drift is, we think we are making conscious decisions every single day of our lives. Like, we think we're in control of our lives. We think we're the pilot behind the plane, you know, in the cockpit of the plane, when in actuality, what's really driving our lives is our habits, belief systems, our fears, our insecurities, what our parents wanted us to do, what our society is telling us to do, right? All of these things, that's actually what's flying our plane. And we are sitting in the cattle car, you know, of our lives. And that's what ends up happening, leading to these mundane lives. Or in many of the men that I coach, that I do work with, they have a lot of the things that they wanted in life. They've got the money, the titles, they've got the family, everything on paper they set out to achieve, and there's still that feeling of, why doesn't this feel better? That's mm-hmm. that state of drift. And, you know, to kind of punctuate this, the definition of hell, which I read somewhere, you know, once upon a time, and I share it all the time because it really seems to cut to the core of a lot of what men are struggling with. The definition of hell is at the end of your life, the person you became meets the person that you could have become. And that person that you could have become is the one that I call the great man within, right? That the person inside of you that knows his purpose, knows his sense of meaning, but you traded him in to live a life of comfort, of security, mm-hmm. of safety, of predictability, or of what other people told sure. you to do. And that I would say is probably the biggest fear that most men that I know have is not realizing that potential and drifting through life.
Drift is the great description of it. I mean, if you really think about it, and you know, you have to do inner work. So you have to create time for that. That time may be time where you're doing an isolated vacation alone. You know, you have yes. to be able to have a partner that you can express them. I need to work on myself. I need to take some time, whether it's just going away to read, whether it's just going away to think, make a list of things that maybe you have just allowed to land in your life without really controlling your destiny. And I could just see people just getting so busy. And I think that this kind of beginning of quarantine, what I had hoped was, and I see a lot of people doing it, is they've realized simple things like how much joy they find in cooking at home. And it's something so simple, but it was just so much easier to go out and eat. But you know what? When you go out and eat, you live in New York City, you're spending a grip of money without even thinking about it. So you have to constantly be working to make more money. And I've seen so many of these new, like, incredibly frugal little groups starting up in New York City where they're talking about how they just cannot believe how much money they save by not doing it. And also that it's part of a project that takes their mind away from all the chatter, and they're able to like listen to some music and get into making this meal. And then you have that feeling of accomplishment. And it's something so basic and simple, but it's something that people haven't had been forced to make the time to do. And I meet so many people who have never really cooked. I mean, I grew up in Pennsylvania where we cooked, and over the winter we baked and we canned and froze all of our own fruits and vegetables. So, you know, that was part of my growing up life. So it was very simple to me to adapt when we had to adapt. I'm not a big going out to eat all the time, but I think it's just small little increments where you realize, oh, that was not only easy, that was fun. That might save me money so I can take a nicer vacation with my family, or maybe take a little bit time off from work. You know, we have to find ways to say, I want to stop drifting into this life that has been laid out for me, that I'm just kind of, like you said, in the sidecar, going along. And when you work with people, are you fascinated by the little steps that kind of trigger them to really finding joy?
Yeah, it's quite interesting. Most of the people end up finding me after they've been woken up from drift. And usually okay. like the wake up call from drift is something that kind of sucks, right? Like usually the wake up calls from drift. I like to say, you know, we get these signs. It's either the tap on the shoulder, the 2x4 across the forehead, or you get hit by the Mack truck, right? Most of us absolutely ignore the tap on the shoulder.
Sure.
And it's usually the 2x4, the Mack truck that wake us up. And these things can also could be, you know, you're
could be a divorce, could be
a divorce.
You get ill, could
get
be,
fired.
Yep, sure.
A global pandemic. How about, you know, where it wakes you up and it causes you to question how you've been living your life. And yes, like Lisa, the littlest of things, like instituting a family dinner one night a week, establishing a 10-minute morning routine instead of jumping right into your phone, looking at your text messages and emails and feeling negative right from the get-go of the day.
Yeah,
meditating or doing breath work, like those little things then accumulate over the course of time where you literally can change the entire trajectory of your life with enough of those little wins. And so that's the game that we're playing in our community.
I love it. I love the morning routine. It's always been so important to me. Like, I don't look at my phone for the first hour I'm awake. You know, I turn on Pandora. That's the one touch I make. I turn on Pandora, just a nice spa sound going around my place. I do that in the morning. And then I recently, during quarantine, also instituted a night routine that I'm really yes. enjoying. And I have to say, I'm sleeping better than ever. And it's just a matter of turning everything off, TV, computer, phone, maybe a little music, because I do like to have a little background sound music, right? But I take a nice long shower. I put away everything that may have been out for the day. It's just a little tooling around. I take lavender. I light a candle. I forgot how nice it is to light a candle by your nightstand before you go to bed. Put some lavender oil on my wrists and feet. And I'm trying to just read 2 chapters a night before I go to bed of something that I want to read. Just 2 chapters. It's not a big responsibility, but it just relaxes you and it just tunes you out from technology, because we're all in this situation where it's pretty much just doom scrolling, right? You go to the news to doom scroll. You don't go to the news to find good news anymore. And if you do, I save the story and send it to everybody. But there's little adjustments we could all make. And I love where you're at right now. I love that the inspiration for the new path for Dom is the word porn, and one of your closest friends is the word porn. So I think it's kind of the irony in our friendship how different our lives have been, but how when this happened and I reached out to you and said, hey, can you hop on the phone? Because I'm that person. Like, if I sent something about my friends, it's not a text conversation. It has to be on the phone. And I just wanted to see where your head was at, because I could only assume the response that you got. And I love that it took you where you are right now. Where can my listeners get everything about you, podcast, your writing, everything?
Sure. Well, first of all, Lisa, like, you are a ride or die friend. Like, you definitely made space for me, called me up, and like provided that support exactly when I needed it. So hopefully your listeners understand how big your heart is. And then to answer your question, the number one thing I would point people to is the Great Man Within podcast. And it's a conversation for men. We hit the topics of purpose, sex, masculinity. I have all of the stuff over there about, you know, like, you know, the porn habits and my journey through sex addiction, stuff that most guys like really want to talk about, but don't have like men that they trust to guide them on that
journey.
They're
afraid it'll come back to them, right? No one's going to admit they went to an underground sex addicts. They're going to go through it and not talk about it. But the greatest thing you can do, I mean, look, in AA, it's very different. Everyone talks about it, and you can find sponsors anywhere. And, you know, you can travel and go to different groups, but still, sex addicts have to be kind of, again, that next layer of shame. And so you share that. I've been a guest on your podcast and very much enjoyed it. And you have a new book that just came out as well.
Ironically, the book is called On Purpose Leadership. And ironically, I wrote that book for the corporate space, which I'm no longer doing work in at all. So, I mean, I like the book. It's a great book. And it's a book geared towards helping you master the art of leading yourself. But quite frankly, I'm over the book. I'd much rather have people come listen to the podcast, the Great Man Within podcast. So if you want, that's where I would point you.
Your labor of love, and we're breaking it off. But I mean, I get it. I get where your head is. And Dom, you know, I love you so much. We'll be friends for our entire lives. You know, the most important thing about my legacy is just making sure the people that I love know that I love them and know that I'm here for them at all times. And I wanted to share what your current experience just was, and also share you, because I've learned so much from your previous writing and from listening to your podcast. And I know that my friends will also learn as well. So it's a joy to share the people I've met along the way with my listeners and my friends. And Dom, I just love you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Love you too, Lisa. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did. Dom is a great friend of mine, and I think you should all give him a follow and learn more about him. Now it is time for us to get to the mailbag segment. Ask Lisa Ann. Don't forget, you can join the party at asklisaann@gmail.com. I do get some good questions, but this week I decided to just take us all. It's going to be a bumpy ride. I mean, a super bumpy ride. Like I mentioned earlier, cream rises to the top. Quite a few of these messages come in with no body. The entire question is in the subject matter. Chris is coming off the bench again. He's kind of like a full-time starter at this point.
Yeah,
and I hand-selected some entertaining questions for all of us today. So, Chris, what do we got with the first one?
First one is from Brett. He starts off, "You looked amazing today." Good start, Brett. "I love what you're doing in the fantasy world and love that you are such a sports enthusiast. Will you please allow DM access in Twitter? You can cut me off if I become a nuisance."
Okay, the irony in this situation, yes, he did come in strong with the compliment. Okay, the guy is not completely off. But when he says, "You can cut me off if I become a nuisance," yeah, Brett, who we now know his name is Freddie because he put his Twitter handle up there, unless Freddie is just his fake name and Brett is his real name. He emailed me the same thing every day last week, sometimes multiple times a day. So when I go into the cluttered email box and I see someone who's saying, will you allow me DM access in Twitter? You can cut me off if I become a nuisance. Yeah, I am cutting you off right now. Like, I might have to block your email because you're cluttering things up. So obviously, you're already a nuisance. I hope that you listen to my podcast and learn more about me. No, you cannot have DM access. And thanks for filling up my inbox, Brett. Next.
Yeah, perfect. Next one is from Muhammad. Muhammad says, I love you very much. Can I see you in my house because I want to kiss your ass and lips and eat your Ritz?
You know, Muhammad was really on a roll inviting me over. Super kind, right? You know, you invite me into your space. That's just lovely. But at the same time, I don't have any Ritz crackers. And I can only imagine that is what he's talking about there. I mean, Ritz crackers, like a carb from way, way, way back when I was a kid. I remember we used to love putting peanut butter and jelly on them, making those little Ritz cracker sandwiches. Those were uber good.
But I put Vegemite on mine.
Oh, I remember eating Vegemite when I went to Australia. Yes,
yep.
Yes,
it's my favorite.
Yes, that gives us salty. It works very well together. So, Muhammad, as much as he wants to kiss my ass and lips and eat my Ritz, I don't have any Ritz, so striking out there again. What's next?
By the way, lips spelt with two P's, according to Muhammad.
Yeah.
I found that interesting.
Yeah.
Axel has the next question, and Axel asks, simply, waffles or pancakes?
Axel, let me start by saying I appreciate you. This is actually a really good question. I mean, this is a tough one because waffles are so good, warm with ice cream on top. Again, many diets ago. But pancakes are something I can still eat because you can buy gluten-free paleo pancakes. I love to put blueberries in them or sometimes peanut butter on top when they're still hot. So
good.
I'm going to go pancakes, but I have to ask you, Chris, waffles or pancakes?
Pancakes, 100%. I'm not a fan of waffles. I don't like waffles. I don't even know how many times in my life I've had waffles. It might have only been one or two. Pancakes all around.
You know, I remember Eggo waffles because you put them in the toaster.
Never had them.
Oh, yeah. We grew up on those as a kid. Anything that was frozen that we could make ourselves because my mom was working three jobs. Like,
yep.
We had to make those. And it's funny. The internet never fails me. Every once in a while, I just sit and I take 10 minutes. I just troll Twitter, you know, and I saw a girl cooking steaks in her toaster today on Twitter. And I was like, I can sign off now because she put the steaks in the toaster.
Whoa.
And pulled them out and they looked great. Now, I don't know if it's good for your toaster. Is your toaster supposed to get moisture in it? Like, what would that do? But if those were the actual steaks on her plate, they looked so good. And she just took two steaks and put them in the toaster. Are you floored? I'm floored.
Yes. I don't know if I'd try it. I'm intrigued. I don't know if I'd try it myself.
I'd do it on a guest toaster. Like maybe get an Airbnb.
True.
Go to an Airbnb and be like, you know what? I'm going to use these guys' toaster. I'm going to put some other food in there. I mean, I've seen people cut cauliflower in slices and put it in the toaster. Ah, it just seems weird.
To be honest though, I like the act of grilling.
Of course you do.
I actually find it fun. So I wouldn't actually care to do this because I'm just going to leave it for a couple of minutes and then come back and that's it. No, I like the act of actually cooking it.
But if you're a chick living in an apartment and you don't have a grill, like this could be an answer. All right, what do we got next?
Next one is from Justin, and Justin simply asks, will you be my stepmom?
Wow. I mean, so much to unpack here. First and foremost, everyone should know,
Justin.
It says, will you be my stepmom? ? But the W in will is not capitalized. So if I was his stepmom, you better believe he would be doing better with his grammar. But you know, where I come from, doesn't the dad choose the stepmom?
Traditionally, yes.
And I'm gonna blame this right now on Brazzers and all the companies out there that insisted on shooting stepmom content, that now that content has gotten in and boiled the minds of young men to think that the stepmom, whether it be Ava Adams, whoever the performer was, Brandy Love or Cherie DeVille, like, that's not real, buddy. You're not getting a hot stepmom that is then going to go and hook up with you. So obviously, because if I was this kid's stepmom, I would make his life living hell. living hell. He would be just doing laundry, cleaning, cooking. He would not be allowed to leave his room. He'd be working at his grammar. He would hate me intentionally. So obviously Justin doesn't listen to the podcast, but for everyone else out there, this is one of the things that I complained about my last couple of years in the business was what we're doing to the minds of young men who obviously aren't brilliant enough to realize that this is all made up. Okay, this is not happening for you. Your dad is not marrying a porn star so that you can hang out with her. So Justin, ixnay on me being your stepmom. What's next?
Next question is from Yusuf. Hello, Miss Lisa. I hope you're fine. I guess I watch most of your videos. Can you give me your phone number? I want to talk to you. A few minutes will be enough for me. You must please this young man. Do you think I'm wrong?
Oh my God. I mean, Yusuf.
Lots to unpack there.
Lots to unpack. I think you're fucking wrong, buddy. Okay, first let's just go through it. I hope you're fine. I guess I watched most of your video. Can you give me your phone number? That's a big no. Okay, there's no way the phone number is going out there. I want to talk to you. A few minutes will be good enough. You must please this young man. Now you're flipping the script and you're being bossy with me. I have the upper hand. I have the phone number. You don't have the phone number. I have the phone number. Do I think you're wrong? I think he is completely wrong, but I got to give it to him. He ended this email hot, hot, hot. And this just shows you what people are doing with their time. You're not reading a book. You're not educating yourself. You're not opening doors. You're not growing. You are sending emails to girls who are never going to send you their phone number, asking for their phone number because you think you deserve it because you're an entitled boy who just thinks, I'm going to email this girl. Yusuf doesn't listen to the podcast either.
But what Yusuf doesn't understand, he thinks that because he's watched a lot of your videos that he deserves your phone number when in reality, probably the more someone watches your videos, the less you would want to give them your number.
Yes, and I would also like to believe that he does not support the financial cause of the adult business. And most likely he's watching his content on tube sites. Because if he thinks he's getting my number for free, most likely he watched the porn for free. So he's just a hot mess. He's very confused. And this next message we should mention to the listeners. This is a subject matter email. There's no body to the email. The entire email is in the subject matter.
And it's from Robinson. Robinson asks, would you give your personal number to a person without knowing them, Yusuf?
Who would do that? I mean, now we got to fill out contact tracing forms everywhere we go in New York City. And I know that everybody's writing fake phone numbers down, like their Google number, because these lists are sitting out places and everyone's information's on there. And I noticed at the beginning, everybody was real diligent. They were writing their address. And they were writing everything detailed. Now it's like so sloppy you can't even read the phone number and there's no address. Like people are getting over sharing their info for more databases. So Robinson, stranger danger, I don't think it's a great idea to give out our phone numbers to strangers. Chris, your take?
100% agree. Don't know if I've ever done it. Happy to never do it.
This one here, I read 2 weeks ago, and I don't know why, but for some reason, it just made me laugh so hard. Like, it made me laugh for like 10 minutes. I forwarded it to a friend of mine. I'm like, yo, I got this email today. She reads it. She's working. She reads it. She texts me back. She's like, people really write this shit down and email it to you? Yes, they do. And it makes for great content on the Lisa Ann Experience. You can join the fun at the where you can ask lisaann@gmail.com. Let's see what Khalil has to say.
And it's the way it's worded that really trips me up. So here we go. Hello, Miss Lisa. I love you. I hope ask you, how many times fucked in week? Thanks.
I did have to get out a decoder ring, but I clearly understood his point. And this is the first time. This guy wants math. So my friend says to me, you need to write him back, which we may do, and write over 100. Because he'll be devastated. Like, she's like, you've got to go at him, like, just right back. Oh, like a random number, like 117 times. And just see what he writes back. Because now I'm at the point where I feel like some of these emails deserve a response so that we can have a follow-up on the mailbag segment, right? So with that said, 117 is going to be the number, even though it's so far from the truth, only because I want to see what he says back. I mean, I am curious to know what he's going to do with this information. And we're going to wrap it around with a familiar email person in the last email.
We're going back to Brett. who was, if people were paying attention, the first emailer that we got to today. It says, Lisa, I will pick you up the next time you are close to Lancaster. His name is Rusty. I missed you live yesterday. Will you follow me on Twitter and can I DM you? I've enjoyed our few chats on Twitter and have always been respectful on Facebook and Twitter and enjoy listening to your knowledge of fantasy sports.
So everyone knows there's an attachment of a photo of him with his horse and buggy. There was a period of time that I lived in Quakertown, Pennsylvania, very close to Lancaster, which is purely Amish. Also, you know, on the Learning Channel, which is like the craziest channel on television, if you ask me. They have a show about Amish people right now, which it's kind of addicting, right? So this guy who is Amish, which they're not normally allowed to be on social media, he obviously can't own a car because he has to do the horse and buggy thing because they're not allowed to own a car. But where is Mr. Brett, a.k.a. Freddie, going to use the internet? Because that is an Amish crime. That is like Amish on Amish crime. There's no internet. There's no TV. There's no socializing. So, again, this same email with the photo of the horse and buggy, which I sent to a friend of mine that's addicted to the Amish show. I said, we have an opportunity to get on a horse and buggy with this guy, Brett. She's like, yeah, we're going to die with this guy, Brett. He's going to put us in his outhouse and kill us. He sends the photo and he sent this email over 20 times last week. So Brett,
the exact same
over
email.
20 times. Brett is very persistent about wanting me to let him DM me. Can you imagine if he had access to my DMs? How many DMs I would get from Brett, a.k.a. Freddie.
Poor Brett, a.k.a. Freddie, is sneaking out every day to have 2 minutes of internet time, and he's using that to email you. What a waste. If you're going to sneak out and you have 2 minutes to get all your interneting done in a day, there are better things for Brett, a.k.a. Freddie, to do than persistently email you. And I don't know why he doesn't realize that.
Yeah, I get a lot of repeat offenders. You know, there's like, you know, I get some good emails, but then I get the repeat offender that like when I go to click on the email, I don't realize that it's a whole thread. And the thread is like 200 emails long because he just keeps emailing and he keeps emailing on the same email. So he's just replying to my not replying.
But don't just set an alarm on their phone and every time it hits like 2 o'clock, they're like, oh shit, gotta go and email Lisa.
Send her another email. This is gonna be the one. Not only is she gonna respond, she's gonna give me her phone number, she's gonna give me her access to her DMs, and she is
and she'll be my stepmom.
And she's gonna want to be my stepmom. All of these things eventually will come true. I am waiting to have Lisa check her email at a very weak moment. And in that very weak moment, it is going to be my turn because I deserve that. But I can say this to Brett, although he's kind of stalkerish. Brett is the very first guy to ever invite me on his Amish horse and buggy. So there's that.
That's something.
There's that. Okay. Again, I love the emails. It is treacherous going into that. I was thinking about live streaming next week. Me going into the Ask Lisa Ann email so that some people could see how many people are straight up repeat offenders. Okay. And also, here's what's been happening lately. You know, there's people I blocked on social media for whatever reason, whether they were obnoxious, whether they were too crazy with politics, and I just felt this is polluting my timeline, whether they were too personal, whatever it is. And I get a lot of emails from them asking if I can unblock them. And it just seems like a lot of work. You know, I remember what it felt like. And, you know, it's not personal that I block people. It's that I like to keep my social media fun and light. And what happens is I'm just like anybody else. And if I see things that are complicated or dark or make me anxious, I tend to not go on social media as much. And if it's that first message that I read and it's one of those people, then it kind of derails my day. I'm not productive on social media. Everyone else misses out on me chatting. So I call it cleaning the streets of social media. But the reason I do it is just to keep it a place where I feel comfortable. So don't anybody out there take it personally. You're not in my head and you don't get the levels of the amount of intensity I get. And if you did, you may be able to take a beat and say, I can kind of understand where how that got a little bit much and just I hope you're still enjoying my podcast because some of them do mention, I listen to your podcast. I wish you would unblock me. But then like 10 more emails will come in from that same person about how they're emotionally feeling about why I haven't unblocked them yet. And I just know it's going to be too much. I mean, I get scolded for posts and it's something people don't know, but people will go into my DMs and they'll leave me a tribe. Like it'll take me 10 minutes to scroll through the whole message about how they feel about something I'm posting. I just can't have it. I can't allow it in my space. It's too much of a distractor and it's not your social media. And you don't dictate policy to me on how I interact with others or what things I'm doing. You know, when I was shooting, oh my gosh, I got so much. Right now, I'm getting a lot of the normal complaints about I've lost weight since I left the business. My body has changed since I started eating plant-based. And I must get 200 complaints a day that I need to go back to looking like I looked before, that my boobs are too small, that I look old, this thin. Even on my OnlyFans, I get so many direct messages about how I was so much better looking before. And people don't realize, like, no one needs to read that shit, but I'm healthier now than I was before, and I feel better now than I did before. And that should be what ultimately matters. So for those of you out there asking me to unblock you or this and that, just understand I'm trying to stay in my happy place, and I'm trying not to go down that road of complicated things on social media. What isn't complicated is subscribing to this podcast.
Very easy.
Rating it. Not complicated.
Just as easy.
I wish all these guys that wanted my phone number would think maybe if I write her a great review, she'll notice me. Like, take your energy away from the email and write a great review for the Lisa Ann Experience. That would make me very happy, but you will still not be getting my phone number. Thank you, everybody, for joining me. I'd like to thank you, Chris Tyler, for being the best podcast producer ever. I'd like to thank my friend Dominic Portuccio for coming on and sharing his wisdom with us. And I would like to thank all of you for the wild ride that is the mailbag. We'll be talking next week, and thank you for another awesome week on the Lisa Ann Experience.